The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
What we have been talking about in the last lecture, we're discussing the energy levels for lattice waves, the atomic vibration. And for the atomic vibration, we did a very simple problem using not quantum mechanics, but just classical Newtonian mechanics. And the problem we dealt with was a one-dimensional atomic chain, and we approximated it with the ideal spring, the interatomic force is treated as an ideal spring. And we treat only the nearest atomic interaction. So we took any atom J, and we look at the force between J and J plus 1 and J minus 1. And with that, we wrote down the Newton's equation of motion. And you see, if you take the limit to differential form, you get a wave equation. That's a continuum limit. That's acoustic wave type of acoustic wave equation. But because we were dealing with discrete atoms, we said that we don't take the limit. We took a gas solution, and from the gas solution, we obtain the energy, which is a frequency. And the wave vector relation is K M psi K A divided by 2. And this K is, again, the wave vector. And this is the same wave vector, type of wave vector as we talked for the electrons. And you remember the solution we guessed for the atomic vibration as a function of time for the atomic J is some kind of amplitude times exponential minus I, omega t minus J, and A, that's my X, and times K, the wave vector, right? So that's the guessed solution. From this guessed solution, I obtain the eigenvalues. And this capital K is the spring constant. And if we plot this wave vector, this is a small k wave vector, and frequency relation, we say this is a sine wave. And in fact, you can see if, again, this, as I said, this K wave vector is the same as we took for electrons. So this is based on the fact I can use the von Kármán boundary condition, periodic boundary condition. I wrap the whole lattice again and ask the this wave function or the amplitude of oscillation to repeat itself. So that's my von Kármán boundary condition will tell me that this K must be 0, 2 pi N divided by capital N A, and well, this N is equals 0 plus minus 1, or this possible numbers, right? Integer numbers. So I get a different. This is the same as we solve, same wave vectors as we solve for the electron wave function. And you can see at K equals pi over A, if I plug K equals pi over A into it, I get a sine pi divided by 2. So that's where the sine function peaks, right? So this is where K is pi over A, and because it's a periodic function, so it's basically repeating each other. And on this side, it's the same symmetric repeating So those are my solutions for the vibrational frequency versus the wave vector. And if I look at this wave vector, when the wave is a very, let's say, when the pi over a, the wave vector represents, is related to the wavelength through k equals 2 pi lambda, right? And so if it's 2 pi, pi over a, that's at this point, what's the wavelength of the vibration? Right? If k equals pi a, that's at this boundary point, what's the corresponding wavelength of this wave here? That's what? Lambda equals 2a, right? So if I look at this atomic chain, the wavelength is lambda equals 2a. What I plot is, okay, so what I have here, this is my A is my spacing between atoms. So wavelength 2A, that will be corresponding to, because here is 2A, right? Okay? So this point will correspond to really this lattice wave have amplitude, the wavelength of 2A. Then if I take a point beyond it, so if I take, for example, let's say this is a 2 pi A, and this is a 4 pi A, so this will be 3 pi A. Am I right? Or 4 pi over A. 4 pi over A. Right? If I take this point, again, I say, what's the corresponding wavelength? If I take 2 pi lambda equals 4 pi A, that would mean my lambda equals A over 2. Right? Right? And if I plot this wave, that means what I have is, because you will mean you will have two periods, if I plot it right, two periods every A, right? Huh? If I take this point, if what I'm giving you another, I give an example, if I take this wave vector, the period of this wave is, let's see whether I have color pens, no. So if I, that means this is the wave corresponding to this point, wave vector, but now I'm trying to say if I take a wave vector of this at this point, then my wavelength is only A over 2, so I would plot my wave a lot more denser, right? Because it's shorter wavelength. But this shorter wavelength, somebody is open their eye, what is it? There's nothing vibrating here, right? So I'm plotting this a period that really doesn't have an atom vibrating there. So this doesn't really make much sense, I plot it. If I plot the 2A, I mean this is a snapshot of the atomic position at the time. Right? They actually represent the actual atomic position. Or the next time, maybe the wave could be going here. This is, again, 2A. That's the actual atomic position. But if I have anything denser than that, I don't have atoms. What it means, really, this region that beyond the pi over A is not a physical wave that represents the actual atomic vibration. You remember when I discussed the electron wave, I say anything beyond this region, anything beyond this region is equivalent, right? If I have a 2π shift here, this point is equivalent based on the Bloch theorem. So for electron, my argument is that I only plot this region because those points are equivalent. And in a way, I'm saying the same. This point and this point is equivalent. And in fact, it's not even allowing to exist. In reality, it doesn't exist, this point here. So for lattice wave, it's actually easier to argue that you only plot your vibrational dispersion in this region from minus pi over A to plus pi over A. And beyond that, this kind of waves with a wavelength shorter than 2A doesn't really represent real situation because the atoms, the minimum separation is A already. So that's the when we plot again the lattice wave dispersion, we only plot this region, and it's symmetrically on both sides, and this is minus over A to plus over A. And similar to the case of electron waves, how many allowable wave vectors I have here inside between minus pi over A to plus pi over A? If I have n atoms in the chain, n vectors, because you can see from here is n equals when it goes from minus pi over A to plus pi over A, this allowable n is capital N. So I have n wave vectors in this region. Okay? And that means that for each wave vector is correspondingly, I have a different wavelength. Smallest wave vector means longest wavelength. The longest wavelength is really spanning the whole crystal. Right? So I have n wave vectors. This is similar to the case of electrons. And and each of these wave vectors represent one wave with a specific period. So each of these wave vectors also represent Kn, represent a normal, what very often we call a normal mode of vibration. Normal mode is just to say a mode with specific wavelengths. So you knock out a drum, the drum vibration, you can always decompose into different frequency, different modes, right? The same with the string from violin or guitar. You lock at it, it excites the normal modes. Okay, and so these are the one-dimensional case, and it's a result from the classical mechanics, Newton's equation of motion. And from here, we'll make a jump to quantum mechanics. We did not solve the Schrodinger equation, but you already anticipate what the quantum mechanics will tell you. If you remember, when we discussed a simple harmonic oscillator, mass spring system, we say the vibrational frequency is 2 pi k over m square root. And the quantum mechanics, that's after solving the Schrodinger equation for harmonic oscillator, tells you the energy is 1/2 over n. It's not, the amplitude is not continuous. And now I have solved the equivalent of this problem for a lattice chain, and this is the relationship I get between the wave vector and frequency. And when you go to solve the corresponding Schrodinger equation, you'll find out Similar to this case, this is a classical result, but the energy is quantized. And for the harmonic oscillator, the lattice chain, I have similar results. If that is corresponding to each k value, I have omega. But at that frequency, that means you have a modes in the crystal with that specific frequency, specific wavelengths. At that specific frequency, specific wavelengths, the energy cannot be any arbitrary value. It can only be h nu plus times n plus 1/2. That's what the quantum mechanics tells you. Okay? So if you go to quantum picture, the quantization you get is now the energy at that specific, corresponding to this specific frequency mode must be h omega n plus 1/2. I use the h bar, so I do write omega. Omega is 2 pi nu, right? So this is the quantum mechanics if you go to solve the Schrodinger equation. For each normal mode, for each mode of vibration, the energy is quantized. And the difference, there is one difference of the lattice wave quantization compared to electron. The electron have the Pauli exclusion principle. That means for each kn, I have one wave vector, one wave function, and I have two quantum mechanical states, right? Because spin up and spin down. But for Fourier, for the lattice wave, I do not have that constriction. I do not have the limit of Pauli exclusion principle. So at each frequency, I can have multiple n's, different n. N could be 0, less than there, 1, 2. And similar to the lemma of electromagnetic wave, this h nu, okay, that's the quanta of lattice vibrational wave, the basic quanta, because the energy must be multiple of this h nu, right? So it's given a lemma of photon. Because the electromagnetic wave, that h nu, has a lemma already of photon, right? So this h nu for lattice wave is called phonon.
H nu or h omega?
Same thing, h bar omega. When you write h nu or h bar omega, because h bar is reduced Planck constant, is h divided by 2 pi. Okay? So this is a strict analogy to the concept of photon. And it just tells you, similar to the case of Einstein arguing the existence of some granularity in electromagnetic wave. An electromagnetic wave is granular with this basic energy quanta h nu. Now your lattice wave also is granular with that energy quanta of h omega, and that h omega is one Fourier. It's not a true matter. It's not like something like an electron you can actually measure a rest mass, right? Electron is a true particle that even when it's stationary, you have a mass. Photon do not have a mass, right? You cannot measure how heavy a photon is. But it has a momentum, has an energy. Right? So momentum gives you the idea that it's a matter. It's something that's like what we deal in kinetics. So it's a particle in that sense. But it's really the quantum mechanical basic units of that normal modes, normal electromagnetic wave, normal modes of electromagnetic wave, and normal modes of the lattice waves. So it's collective vibration. Okay? And so this is the case of a simple molar atomic chain. Every atom here is the same. Say this is the same atom, and the repeating distance is the same. And for this special case, we get this omega k relation is also called the dispersion relation. And we get a sine type of dispersion relation. And now I'm going to discuss other cases without any further proof. I give you one example, one homework that you're going to do the next case I'm going to talk about. You're going to solve the equation yourself. And this is the case where I have a diatomic chain. So some of the crystals, if you think about sodium chloride, potassium chloride, right? And it has two different atoms that have two different mass. So the repeating distance is not between atoms. It's to say you have to repeat the sodium and then sodium again. The chloride is in between sodium. So if I do a one-dimensional analogy, I have one atom, I have a different atom, I have one atom, I have a different atom. So I have a repeating of this two atoms at the one lattice point. And so I would have a different lattice constant. So this is a M1. This is a M2, and this is a K1, and this is a K2, right? In the most general case. The distance could be different, mass constant, spring constant could be different, and mass could be different, right? And you repeat this, and you can do a similar analysis as we did for this monoatomic chain, lattice chain. But in this case, you have to write your Newtonian equation of motion for each atom, so for two atoms at least, right? So if you do one period, let's say this is A, that's your two period, repeating period, periodicity of your crystal. And so if you take atom J here, and there is a J prime, the same J, but it's for the other atom, right? This is for the unit cell J. This is one of the J. This is the other atom. You write two equations, and then you try to find out what's the omega K relation. Okay, that's your homework. And you will find out that the solution now becomes, again, pi over A. And you have two solutions. Okay? So the first solution is similar to that monoatomic chain. And I'm plotting only half of it. I'm not plotting both sides because it's symmetric. So I'm plotting half of it. This is a one solution, and the other solution will something look like this. Now this becomes also a little bit familiar. It's like an electron, you have a band gap at the edge, right? And you do have, for this phonons, you have become two branch because you have two atoms. And this branch, we call it acoustic phonons. And this band, we call it optical phonons. Okay. And of course, the number of K, still there are N unit cell. That means there are two N atoms. So here is a one. Here is at the end is N. That's the total number of unit cell. But each unit cell has two atoms. Each repeating period has two atoms. Right? So you get from minus from here, minus pi over a to plus pi over a, you have nk values, right? Kn values. And now you have two branch, right? This one has n capital N values, k values. This one also has capital N. So you have a number of 2n k values, 2n modes, right? 2 capital N modes. That's because you have 2n atoms in total in one dimension. And the reason that this is called optical mode is because it's at a higher frequency and it's closer to some infrared photon. Okay, it can be easier to interact with the optical photons. So it's called the optical mode. And if you plot the vibration, what does this mean in terms of vibration wave? What does the wave look like? And so if, for example, we plot here, this corresponds to longer wavelength one, right? And the acoustic vibrational mode, that's a lower branch, would mean this is the wavelength, corresponding wavelengths, and this is the one of the atom, this is the next atom, this will be another one atom, this is the next atom. So those will be the atoms in phase, the two atoms in phase, right? And that will be the acoustic branch. And then the optical branch turns out it's the same wavelength, but the two atoms are out of phase. The one is vibrating towards, so this one is vibrating towards this direction, but this small atom is vibrating towards this direction. It's two opposite direction. And that also means you will take more energy to split it, right? The opposite direction, larger distance. That's why the frequency is higher, right? Frequency is higher, energy is higher. So optical branch has a higher energy. So this is the case when you have diatomic lattice chain, and hopefully you can go through the exercise. And this is a one-dimensional case. Now I'm further moving on to a three-dimensional case, because in real crystals, you have possibility in each direction, just like we said about the electrons, right? In each direction of a crystal, for example, in the simplest case of a cubic, and along this direction, I have one period. Along this direction, I have a different period. Different period, different distance, different spring constant. That will give you different relation, Fourier dispersion relation. So in the 3D case, 3D crystal case, and the first thing is different crystallographic direction. You will have different dispersion. So that again means when we plot the dispersion, if you look at the electronic dispersion, we plot, let's say, for example, this is one of the crystal direction, pi over a, and the other direction maybe is a different direction. It's not the same direction symmetric, but I'm plotting for laziness. I plot only half of it. This half is this way. The other half may be this way. That's not the it's to say, why it's not symmetric? Because I'm not plotting in the same direction. I'm giving you different directions. Okay? And the other point is, when I discuss the vibration in one dimension case, because I'm discussing only one dimension, so the atom is going along the lattice chain direction, right? Now, in a three-dimensional crystal, the atom can vibrate along the wave propagation direction. So this is the wave propagation direction. Let's say the wave vector represents the propagation direction. And the atom can vibrate along the direction, but it can also vibrate perpendicular. Three dimension, there's no restriction on the direction of vibration anymore. Right? So I would have, if I decompose again three directions, right, in three-dimensional space, along the wave vector propagation direction, that's called a longitudinal wave, because the vibration is in the same direction as the wave propagation. So the sound wave you hear here is a longitudinal or transverse? Longitudinal wave. That's a pressure wave. It's propagating in the same direction that it's propagating towards you, the pressure oscillation there. Electromagnetic wave is a transverse. Right? The ray direction is coming towards us. The electric and magnetic field are perpendicular to the ray direction. That's a transverse. Acoustic wave can be either longitudinal or transverse. So you can have, if the atomic vibration is this direction, it's longitudinal. Atomic direction is vibrating perpendicular to this direction, it's transverse. Okay? And of course, you say, what happens if the atom vibrates neither perpendicular? But you can always decompose that into perpendicular and in the same direction. Right? Yes? Yeah.
So that's a transverse wave, right?
No, it doesn't have to be a transverse wave. Okay, these two atoms can vibrate in the same direction. This two, or right? This is the acoustic wave. This is the optical wave, opposite to each other. But this in three dimension, it can be vibrating this way while the wave is propagating this way. That picture I cannot draw better.
Okay.
Okay, I could draw, 1D, then you will not see that this will be the same direction, so I have to draw a different amplitude using arrow here.
Okay?
So, 3D, I will get how many possible transverse direction? Any direction I can decompose into two, right? Perpendicular direction. So I would get two transverse, just the electromagnetic wave is same. You have two transverse electromagnetic waves and one longitudinal. So, and because of that, in one three dimension, I will see three curves. Okay? Because I have three branch, three longitudinal transverse. And typically transverse has a lower frequency than longitudinal. So those two are transverse. And this one is longitudinal. So these are transverse acoustical. Because here is the lower branch is acoustical. Transverse acoustical phonon. Longitudinal acoustic phonons. Three branches.
Why does transverse have more vibration?
Well, if you think about the compression of the atoms, which is easier? If you have a chain of atoms, is it going this way is easier or is going this way is easier? That's basically the lower energy means it's easier to go and it's lower vibrational frequency. Okay? So, And that will be, often you will see the complication. Well, it's not just one curve, it's a three curve. But a lot of times you see only two curves, you see only two. Okay? And you'll see every time I draw it at the boundary, I draw this almost, it's always like a perpendicular. Sine at the peak is a perpendicular. This is at the boundary, one characteristics. And the reason you see two is because these two transverse directions, they at time vibrate in, if you look at in a cube, right? The atom vibrate in this direction and the atom vibrate in this direction, they see the similar surrounding. So similar surrounding means they will get the same vibrational frequency. So you actually have two branches here that just don't show. It looks like one, but it's a degenerate branch. It's 2-4 onto 1. Okay? It still means you have two, but just to see this two is identical. You just see one curve. Longitudinal is seldom overlapping with transverse. Two transverse can overlap.
Okay, so if all three dimensions of vibration are taken care of by the right side of that plot, what is the left side?
The left side is symmetric. See, I see this is a pi over a. This is a minus pi over a. So it's always a symmetric.
Oh, so that the plot there above where the line is smaller is...
Well, this is for different directions. So I'm plotting here is a. Here, this diagonal is a square root of 2a. So the inverse will be square root of 2a pi. That's a different direction. But if you plot the same direction, it's symmetric. So that's why we only plot half of it. Okay? Yeah, conservation of energy. Minimization of energy. That's a very important principle you want to learn. And that's the case of three-dimensional monoatomic lattice. Now I get more complicated. I see each three dimension can be same, like, again, the salt crystal, right? Three-dimensional. I have two atoms, chloride, potassium, right? So, again, I would have an optical branch, and I have three optical branches. Two translational, and two, one longitudinal. So, I was in this case, you will say if it's a you will see the longitudinal and transverse, it becomes a reverse, most of cases. Sometimes these two can cross each other. Okay? So those are the optical branch. This is acoustic. This is acoustic. And this is optical. So the general rule is if I have m atoms at one lattice point, that means I have m atoms in one pair. Then I will have then I have n unicell. I will explain what is unicell, okay? Then I will have 3n acoustic modes. You count, because here from, I said from minus pi over a to plus pi over a, you have n points in wave vector. So you have 3, because you have longitudinal 2 transverse, you have 3 acoustic modes, and all the rest are optical. So if you have 3 atoms in one period, you will get 6 optical modes. Those are just more lines above the acoustic one. So my drawing on board will never be as good as you look at the paper, and you will see this thing. This picture says this, different crystallographic directions of the lattice vibration, different materials. Okay, just don't get scared of it. And having said all these complications, we tend to make a simplification. Just like last time when I talked about electrons, right? I said that we expand the dispersion near the maximum or minimum. When we talk about electron example, I say this are the dispersion relation. But I say we expand near those maximum and minimum so that for electron, we often use, for example, at the conduction band edge, I use h bar square k square 2m star. That's the approximation I will use often later on. And I can do the same thing for photon. Except the photons, you can say here it's a sine starting point. And very often this region is a lot of interest. And we want to expand this region. One way to do it is just a straight line. And so as approximation for this dispersion, one is the Bayes approximation, which just to say, well, I'm going to approximate this as a straight line. This is omega, but you still be limited by pi over a. And in fact, there's another approximation in the Bayes approximation. And it just say in all directions, I use the same dispersion. Here, I'm saying that different direction, you have different relation. But the Bayes make the very simple, just say isotropic crystal. Isotropically, it's the same in all directions. So that's a Bayes approximation. And the other approximation, but this, the Bayes approximation is clearly not good for this one. Right? So this one is Einstein approximation. So this is the Bayes. And Einstein, just to say, I approximate as a horizontal line. Okay? And for either case, either approximation, turns out, again, later on, based on those approximations, the important thing is to remember that those are the K points. There are N points from one period, minus pi over A to plus or pi over A. And when we count how many modes, that's this counting game, that's the content of next lecture. So those are the things. What I went through, all this derivation and showing is complicated. You look at the figure, it looks complicated for both electrons and photons. But at the end, my purpose is for you to not get scared. Look at it, oh, you can calculate it if one day you have to do it. But in terms of analysis, we often just use those simple dispersion relationship to do the analysis. Okay? And so that's in terms of the energy levels of electrons and here photons. And all of this discussion so far is mostly starting with one-dimensional and then moving to three-dimensional. And three-dimensional, all this I'm assuming that you kind of know what is a crystal. But what I want to do next is to give you more formal names, formal terminology about the crystal, how we define the crystal. So that's actually the first section. I reversed it in my lecture. So let's talk about the crystals, crystal structures, how we and crystal structure, yes?
Yeah, I got a question. Can we get the sound speed from the dispersion?
Oh, yes. I forgot to mention that. You can get the sound speed. This is the region sound. here you can think about the wavelengths. The wavelength here is pi atomic distance, and this one atomic distance, let's say, is 5 angstrom. That's a very short wavelength, right? 5 to 10 angstrom atomically in this region. But sound wave that we can hear is very long wavelength. It's almost close to zero in this region. So a tangent of that sine curve, this sine curve, when close to zero, if you look at the dispersion we wrote written down, right? So if it's close to zero, sine x is x, right? So this one is 1/2 km ka divided by 2. So that gives you omega equals velocity times wave vector. So the wave at the velocity is k divided by m times a. Right? That's the sound velocity. So in a way, from sound velocity, you can infer, for example, the spring constant. Right? Lots of information you can get. Optical is because that's for the high frequency one. That's for this high frequency. That's not for here, right? Not this is the sound, acoustic. The optical one, this high frequency is closer to the optical wave energy. And for this photon to interact, remember when we discussed in chapter 2, light to interact with the matter, it must match the energy level. And this is easier to match the optical wavelength phonons. Not visible, infrared, 10 micron, a lot of material at infrared 10 micron and up, they began to be absorbing due to directly through the lattice vibration. So the crystals, in terms of a description of the crystal, it turns out a lot of crystals have a basic same structure, silicon, germanium, gallium arsenide, and salt, for example, sodium chloride. They actually have the same structure. The difference is just we put in different atoms into the same structure. So in terms of describing crystals, we say a crystal itself, we can first extract the structure. This structure, we use a lattice. And then, putting onto each lattice point, we put the atom. We put the 2 atoms, we put the 1 atom, or sometimes we put the 3 atoms. So, sodium chloride is an example. We put it onto each of the lattice points, 2 atoms, a sodium and a chloride. So here, this atom or 2 atoms we put there is called the basis. So a lattice plus a basis give us a crystal, ideal crystal. So what we first describe is the lattice. What is a lattice? Lattice is not a true material. It's just an idealization of a periodic structure. What's this periodic structure? What that periodic structure looks like? So a lattice is a periodic arrangement of points in space. And let's describe this lattice. I draw only a two-dimensional lattice. You can say what are the 3D by analogy. So some imagination. Then let me draw this lattice point. It should be all doesn't have any size. Okay, periodic arrangement of points in space. Here I'm drawing 2D. You can think about 3D periodic arrangement. And then onto each of these points, I put sodium chloride crystal, for example. Sodium chloride, a pair of sodium chloride. And put it at the same orientation. I put it identically. Then I form a crystal. Okay? So first, to describe this lattice, I will define... You can say, if I define 2 vectors, this vector and this vector. Let's say this is a1, this is a2. Okay? And if I use the a combination of this a1 and a2, so if I have n1 a1 plus n2 a2, and this n1, n2 are integer. With this combination, I can reach every other lattice point, right? Right? This combination, I can reach every other lattice point in this crystal. So this A1, A2, or if I have 3D plus N3, A3, right? A1, A2, A3, this choice of vector that from there I can construct all other lattice points. Those vectors are called the primitive lattice vector. So A1, A2, and in 3D, A3, this set primitive lattice vectors. And but this choice is not unique. I can take these two sets. I can also take this one and this one. This is still a primitive lattice vector. Right? You can construct all other lattice points. Think this is a realist square. My drawing may not be ideal. Okay? And the inside square I have, in the internal I have a point there. So I can use this tool to construct this point. Right? And any of the points in the lattice, I can use that primitive lattice vector to reach. And this is how you define the primitive lattice vector. But I can give a ladder choice which is not a primitive. That's this one and this one. This choice will not be primitive because I cannot reach the inner point. The inner point has to be a fraction in length. Right? It's no longer integer combination. N1, N2 cannot be integer if I want to reach this point inside that square. Right? So this two choice is not primitive univector, say lattice vectors. And but sometimes it's choosing to use it because it's more convenient to use. Okay, so with a primitive lattice vector, I can draw. In this case, I have a parallelogram. Right? And with this basic shape here, I can repeat and fill the whole space. You agree? So the two, the three sets of primitive lattice vector form a primitive unicell. This form a primitive unit cell. And with the so I can repeat the primitive unicell fill the whole space. And this primitive unicell, if you look at what I draw here, how many lattice points it has? Four. It has four corners, right? But it only has you have to count the overlap. Because each of this corner is shared with another four, or one, two, three, four. So each primitive unicell has only one lattice point equivalent, right? So each primitive unicell has one lattice point. But the problem here is, of course, I have many ways to draw this primitive unit cell. I can draw this way. I can draw this way. Different choices. Right? And that's why there's a one unique construction. There's one way to make it unique. And it's not the most convenient way, unfortunately, but it's a unique way. And that unique way is a so-called Wigner side cell. So it's Wagner or Wigner? I think Wagner.
I.
Side cell. And the way to construct that is now I want to plot a unit cell surrounding one lattice point, or not surrounding one lattice point. And what I do is I make a connection of this lattice point with all the other points that I can reach. Okay? And then I take a bisect. I take a bisect of all these connections. You see what I'm doing? I take a bisect, and here is probably another point. So here the minimum of this area formed by all these bisects. This is the minimum form. That's a unit cell. There's one lattice point here, and no lattice, other lattice point included there. There's only one lattice point. That's a primitive unit cell. And like I said, this is a very often it looks ugly. Okay? It's not beautiful, but it's unique. With that rule, you can all, given any crystal, you can always draw it and define your primitive unit cell. Okay? So this is a Wagner-Zeitz cell. But as I said, it's not always sometimes say preferable to deal with this complicated shape. So there are also conventional unit cell. And the convention is just to say I define. I don't follow your primitive unit cell. I define a cell. And you have cubic, for example, in this case, if I take this square, it's much easier to deal with squares. But in this square, there's an extra point. So in a conventional unit cell, there may be more than one lattice point. Right? And correspondingly, those are conventional lattice vectors. Okay. All those are just the terminology and the name of choice. And what I'm drawing here is a two-dimensional case. You just use the imagination to extend to three-dimensional case. And the key is you have to repeat, when you construct your crystal, you have to repeat such that it can fill the whole space. Right? There's no gap left when you repeat a unit cell through the primitive unit cell through the whole space. No gaps. And that's how we say, with that, you have a crystal. Periodic arrangements. And then in the case of three dimension, it turns out there are, of course, the most general three dimension is if you think about the parallel parallelepiped, and you can those angles are now 90 degrees, no symmetry there, and I can use this to fill the whole crystal. Right? There's no any symmetry in this structure, and but there are lots of crystal has a more beautiful structure than this, and it has some symmetry associated with it. And you can have 90 degree, or you can have cases, this the lattice constant, or this length of this edge are same, so you can have a cubic structure, and hexagonal structure, and various kind of crystal structures that have different symmetry. Different the most symmetric one is a cubic structure, right? So you can have crystals of different symmetry, and turns out there are only a total of 14 type of structures. So therefore, Bravais lattice. And among these 14, it's often grouped into 7 groups. And those are the starting from most general case to more special cases. And among the 7 groups, I will only use the cubic one as example. So if you look at the cubic group, and there are the simple case where you have a simple cubic at each of this corner, you have one lattice point. I'm not talking about any atoms yet. So each corner has one lattice point. How many corners you have in this simple cubic? 8 corners. You have 8 lattice points. Or you have one, because each corner is shared by 8 of these cubes, right? So if you put no more other lattice points in this cubic, this is called a simple cubic. And if you look at periodic table, there are not many crystals that have simple cubic structure. Simple single atom crystals, very, very few. As I look at it, I can only see nitrogen. Somehow when you condense it, it probably have simple cubic structure. There are not many. And the next one is, rather than this simple cubic, you have one extra lattice point at the body center. So every corner you have a lattice point, but also you have an extra one at the body center. So I draw the diagonal, so I know where is the body center. This is the body center. And plus this 8 corner. How many lattice points in this one? 2, right? Center one is not shared, and 8 corner shared. So you have, this is a body centered cubic. So that's also BCC structure. A lot of the crystals in the first row of the periodic table are BCC structures. Okay? And the third cubic is, rather than the center of the cube, it's on the center of every face. Okay? So every face, how many faces this cube has? 6. 6, so every face, let me just draw one face, okay? Here is one face. There is a cube there. There's a lattice point. So, how many lattice points I have in one face-centered cubic? This is called the face-centered cubic. Remember, there is a sharing there, right? How many lattice points I have? 4, because this face is shared between 2. So, this lattice point is shared between 2. 6 divided by 2 is 3, plus 8 corner. Each one is 1/8, so you got 3 plus 1 equals 4. So you got the 4 lattice point in one cubic. It's good to remember this, because given this, and given another parameter, that's the lattice constant, this is A, lattice constant. Because it's a cubic, so just a one number. So given a lattice constant, given the atoms, given the crystal structure, you can go directly calculate density without any other information. Right? It's just counting the mass of each atom, counting how many atoms you have in the crystal in one cube, and counting the volume of one cube. So without any other additional information, you're ready to calculate the density of the crystal. So those are three often seen structure. This is called face center cubic. So it's a FCC, BCC, simple cube, SC structure. And the lesson I want to talk is how we label different surface. Okay, inside, remember, I will repeat this cube into periodic, in ideal crystal, infinite periodic crystal structure arrangements. Right? Big, millimeter, even tens of micron is already very big. You can go to estimate in 1 micron cube how many atoms you have. Make an estimation. Give me a number. This one, let's say a cube, lattice constant is very often 5 angstrom. So 1 micron, how many atoms you have? Cube. Throw me a number and let's see whether the number is right. 1,000? Anybody?
8 into 10 to the 9.
Okay. 10 to the 9th. And let's say 1 micron is 1 divided by 5 angstrom. Right?
Power 3.
That's the number of cubes you have. Right? Each cube, you got 8 atoms, let's see. Or 2-4 atoms. From 1 to 8, or even more. But this is so you got 1 micron is 10 to the minus 6, 5, 10 to the minus 10 cube. So you get the order of magnitude right, and this is 125 times 10 to the 12, right? It's a huge number of atoms in 1 micron. One micron in many cases effectively becomes bulk crystal. Okay, and now I want to label different crystal plan, because if I have, I can draw many different plan. Any of this, I'm drawing one plan here, right? And I can repeat, right? This plan I can repeat through the whole crystal. There is a repeating distance. All those plans are identical, right? So how I would call each of this plan? And if I take a simple cubic, this surface, all these 6 faces seems to be identical to me. How would I label them? And I can draw any plan, and I will intersect. So these are my major univector direction, right? If I have a cube, and I draw any plan, and this is the intersection of this plan with the univector direction. Let's say if this one intersect as 2, this is a 3, this is a 4. 4 times the unit constant, 3 times the unit constant, 2 times the unit constant. That's a plan I'm drawing. How would I label this plan? That's just a convention. I give a simple way to label it. Right? This is a 2, let's say this is a A1. This is A2 and A3. And of course, what I mean when I say 3 is 3 times lattice constant, 2 times lattice constant, 4 times lattice constant. And in each direction, that lattice constant may be different. And the way to label it is a so-called a Miller index. And the step is, first you find this intersect, and then you invert it. You inverse this intersect. So my inverse is 1/4, let's say starting with A1, so it's 1/2, and then A2 is 1/4, A3 is 1/3, right? And then next step, you multiply by the least common denominator. What's my least common denominator here? 12? Right? 6, 12. My math. I was talking, I teach my son every night. Least common denominator. 6, 3, 4. Right? And that's my index for this plan. And this, I write just a 6, 3, 4. This is the crystal plan. Why I want to do this inverse? You see, why you want to inverse it? Well, the problem is, if you don't inverse it, let me try to label this plan. Right? A1, A2, A3. A1, A2, A3. So, A1, this plan. Try to label this plan. You will first find the intersect with the major axis. What are the intersects of this plan? A1 is 1. How about A2, A3? Infinite. So it's 1, infinite, infinite. I don't want to write the infinite, so I invert it. I invert it, I got the 1, 0, 0. So this plan is 1, 0, 0. Common denominator is 1, right? And this is 1, 0, 0, and this one, the negative direction, that surface will be minus 1. I will put the minus 1, 0, 0, but I don't write the minus this way, I write this way. I write it into here. So the sixth surface, this is a plus 1, 0, 0. That the other one is minus 1, 0, 0. This is a 0, 1, 0. This is a 0, minus 1, 0. You can label all the six. And sometimes I just label using a curved bracket to represent those are all the surfaces, six surfaces, 1, 0, 0. Okay? So those are the way how we index the crystal surfaces. And my next topic is to think about how to describe the crystals, and let's put in the lattice. Let's put in the basis. So what determines why a specific crystal, what kind of lattice constant you have, and why you get this crystal structure. So what are the bonding? The bonding force among the atoms. So what bonds crystal together? Why you get this lattice constant, different crystal, even though structure is the same, you got a different lattice constant, right? And the first question, why you each, like silicon have FCC and other crystal may have a different structure, and that's actually a very difficult question to answer. And theoretically, the answer is easy. The crystal has that structure because in that structure is most stable. It's the most stable. What does that most stable mean? Minimize energy. We don't want to do more work. Okay? That's what I say. That's a very important principle to remember, to try to minimize the energy. But the problem is, I want to cook. Now, a lot of time we do people do material search. They want to find the material. That becomes trouble. Because how do you know which atom is where that will have the minimum energy? Right? And that's the most difficult part in terms of material finding. Because it's hard, although you have the principle, if you see you want to do a calculation, you can put the atoms anywhere. You go to find your minimum energy point. That's also in people do protein structure identification. They want to, if they want to compute the protein structure, and they try to search, putting carbon, hydrogen, putting all these atoms there, which structure give you a minimum? Sometimes it's not an absolute minimum, it's a local minimum. Okay? And this part is very difficult, and I don't have a good answer. But once you know the structure, you see it's a body center, face center structure, then the rest is much more relatively easier. Because you can put the atom there, and then you can count. Each atom has how many electrons, and the electron essentially is the electron or ion interaction, positive electron, negative electron, let's say the proton. Those interactions that will determine at which point you got the minimum energy. And that minimum energy is a preferred lattice constant, give you the separation of the atoms. So what are those? So you have to count the forces. And we showed before, in general, most of the time, the potential, remember, the force is related to potential, right? Force is inverse potential gradient. So I prefer to draw the potential, and maybe there other people prefer to draw the force. And the potential is typically this way. We draw this in the first chapter. And one is attraction. And the other is repulsive. And then you can see you have a slope change. So the force change from attractive to repulsive. And the simplest potential, the weakest potential, doing the attractive that's really the distinguishing point. Repulsive is when two atoms begin to overlap, and you have the inner core of electrons or even the protons, the same charge began to repulse, began the repulsion each other, right? And repulsive potential is typically very strong, so you can see that curve is sharp. And repulsive, they're very often used the expression for repulsion is 1 over R. R is the separation between the atoms. 12th power. This is a Nina-Jones potential. Or sometimes people use exponential decay as a function of R, lambda exponential R divided by rho. This lambda and rho are all constants that you can determine based on what you know about the crystal structure. For example, lattice constant. This is a Bohm-Meyer type of repulsive. So repulsive is generally either take this or this. The attractive is more really the distinguishing point between different type of bonding forces. And the least strong bond, the weakest bond, is the Van der Waals bond. That's like argon crystal, those inert gas crystals. And this inert gas, they have very stable in terms of the electronic configuration, full in the orbital, electron orbital, as we discussed in chapter 2. And so you got the nuclei, and electron, and the next lattice point you got a nuclei and an electron, right? You see, well, usually they are neutral. If it's purely neutral, there's no interaction. If there's no charge, neutral, if it's the net charge is zero, it doesn't seem to have any interaction, right? But the problem is those are all doing the orbiting, and it turns out that this electron have a field that can affect this nuclei, the ion. And similarly, the ion can interact with the electron. And if you remember, if it's just a two charge, positive or negative charge, Coulomb interaction, what's the potential form? 1 over R, or 1 over R squared, 1 over R, right? So that's 1 over R. And but once you, because of the cancellation of those positive negative in itself already, the interaction of this charge is much weaker than pure ionic Coulomb between a positive negative charge. And in this case, its a potential is 1 over R6 power. Okay, this is van der Waals force. It dies out much more quickly. Okay, 1 over R, you can extend it much longer. 1 over R6 power, it dies quickly. So, in van der Waals, so if you combine this attractive with the Lennard-Jones, you get a van der Waals crystal, like that describes argon or this inner crystals. And so if we combine that, we will form between two atoms, Uij, then we have BRij, that's the distance between the two atoms, minus ARij 12th power. That's the... this is a B, and this is a plus minus, and this is often written as a 4 epsilon sigma Rij 12th power minus sigma Rij 6th power. That's just a redefine AB into sigma epsilon. Okay? So you get a pair of interaction potential in the crystal between atom I and atom J. And that's the belong to the whole pair. It's not just belong to atom I, belong to atom J. Right? So when you want to sum up to get the total potential of the crystal, the total potential crystal is just summing this up. So the total potential is then sum up this one, Uij, but divided by a factor of 2 because you don't want to count it twice. Okay, summing up all the atomic possible atomic position. Once you sum this up, you want to find the crystal structure, you minimize it. You find where the minimum is, that will give you the atomic distance, because you can describe Rij all in terms of the atomic distance A, right? It's from the basic cube. That's what the basic principle is, and I'll stop here. The homework should be ready on the web. I put it on 3 o'clock. And there is a seminar today at 4 o'clock. You're encouraged to go, particularly the paper I want you to read is related to this. This is room 1242 at 4 o'clock. And this is on photonic crystal. I give you the paper to read is a photonic crystal. It's talking about analogy of this crystal structure for electromagnetic wave. So today I discuss the crystal structure, and that's a photonic crystal.
Give me your homeworks, and you can pick up the second homework.
Yes.
Divide the total potential by two again.
Yeah. Because
it's gonna be 20 twice. Because 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4.
Yeah.
So you mean 1, 2, 2, 1?
Yeah, 1, 2, 2, 1. You don't want the count twice. Okay, yes. Okay. Right. When you sum. Yes.
I went to the copy tech to pick up chapter 2, and they said you ran out of copy because
oh.
The number that you put in.
Oh, okay.
Actual people sign up exceed the number that you put in.
I see. I'll ask them to make more. Then. Can you tell Arvind to ask them make them?
And another thing is, I have some. I read through chapter 1 and I made.
Yes, please.
Do you want me to
Yeah, if it's not a lot, you can just email.
Okay.
That would be good.
Okay.
If it's a lot, maybe.